Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, joined right now by the general manager of the Atlanta Braves, Alex Anthopoulos, on Sports Radio 92.9. Hey, Alex, thanks so much for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be on.
So the expression, I slept better, which is what I thought of on Sunday night, as you guys had a great weekend in Boston. You get over 500. I'm thinking it's been a long, well, not that long, actually one of the fastest turnarounds in terms of starting 0-7. But do you actually sleep better on Sunday night than, say, if I checked in with you 7 weeks ago and you were 0-5 or 0-7 after the road trip? Is that an actual thing?
Yeah, especially going into an off day. You know, I know it's crazy, but you get to carry the win over. You know, and I normally, you don't really, you know, the losses always hurt. You don't normally enjoy the wins, but I'll tell you this, when you start 0-7, you savor them, especially at the beginning, because it's painful to go through it. So, look, Saturday night sucked on so many levels. It was, you know, we're up 6-2, and, you know, Granholm gave us a nice start through 6-5-0. Yeah, and it's like that, look, we've done that to other teams. It happens. It's happened to us. You know it's going to happen again and over the course of the season. But those really, and, you know, especially because you feel like you had a chance to win the series. So to come back the next day, score runs, have a good outing, all that kind of stuff, it's definitely, you feel better. But look, we're still nowhere close to where we want to be. The NL is stacked. You know, you look at six of us made the postseason last year. There's a bunch of teams, Reds, Giants, Diamondbacks, Cubs, you know, that did not,
last year.
They make playoffs, yeah. So, I mean, and you've got, you know, that I'm sure there's somebody I forgot there, that, you know, that, but you look at 11, 12 teams that, you know, for six playoff spots in the NL, that very much have the talent to be in the playoffs. So, it's going to be a grind, but look, I'm encouraged because I do think there's still a lot of upside. We still have guys that I think we'll perform better because their numbers are not going to end up where they are right now. And we've got Strider back tonight, Acuna hopefully back very soon behind him. And we should be getting better and trending in the right direction.
I will say, having done this for a long time, 25, 30 years in this town, there is still something about organizations that you trust. And in I would say your fan base and the sports fans here, there is still a mindset, thanks to you, thanks to Snit, thanks to Bobby, thanks to that we will figure this out. And the, you know, we were 8 games under 500 at one point and just slowly went about our business of doing what the Braves do. Did you always have that sense, even as bad as it started, that I know how good this team can be, and I also know the history of how we play under Brian Snitker, we will figure this out?
You ultimately believe, you know, it's one thing if, you know, Chris Sale got off to a slow start, but if you watched his stuff, it was still fantastic. And you're like, okay, this isn't going to continue. Some of the position players of the offense, you know that you prorate those numbers the first week, 10 days, 2 weeks. It's not going to carry on for 6 months. So you know it's going to turn. And when you're 0-4, 0-5, 0-6, you don't know when it's going to end, and you're thinking, when is that first win going to come? But look, at the same time, it's still embarrassing, right? You still, you know, I remember, you know, obviously our first game back, we had this 0-7 road trip. Now I'm doing town halls here. But I think what helps is Terry McGuirk, our chairman, you know, he's steady. I mean, he is a rock. He doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. You know, even though I've been doing this a long time and I've been through 10-game winning streaks, losing streaks, on-field, off-field, all kinds of issues over so many years as a GM, he's been through it all too, and he knows it. And having someone in that chair who's, you know, pretty much, you know, has at the ownership level, really, is our chairman and our control person, that's steady, that doesn't get rattled, it gives you comfort as a GM. And I think, you know, I want to speak for Snit, but I'm sure it gives Snit comfort as well. So you never overreact. You know it's going to, you know, I had a GM call me early on that was saying, oh, you know, they were scuffling, and he's younger and inexperienced as a GM, and asked me. And I said, look, man, you just got to ride it out. I know it's nobody wants to hear it. It's a long season and all that. But, you know, there's going to be peaks and valleys and so on. And you just got to grind through it. But, you know, I ask guys like Olsen and Harris that live here or from here, you know, hey, 0-7, are, you know, I'm not from here, right? I don't have a ton of friends and family here and so on. Toronto, I would feel it a lot more. I went to school there and so on. But I said, hey, how's it been? Your friends, your families, everybody getting all over you, this and that. And they said, you know what, for the most part, it's been fine. So we appreciate the fact that the fan base is passionate, intense. We get great support. I appreciate the fact that you talked about trust and so on. You hope to get to that point. But I also know that you can't carry over. There's no equity that you can carry over. I mean, we are expected, just like the players, but as a management group, to bring results every day, every year. I never lost sight of that fact. I realized it really more so in the first half of 21, after three divisions in a row, of, hey, you're not going to say, it's all right. You know, you've had winning before. I know we're expected to win, and, you know, we expect that out of ourselves.
Alex Anthopoulos with us. A lot of baseball stuff to get to, actual nuts and bolts of the team. So did you know before us, days before, about Jerks and Profar, and is that why Alex Verdugo was in the mix? Or when do you find that out?
No, so the way the program works is the club is, one, it's the club's not involved, right? That is through the MLBPA and MLB. Look, there's appeal processes that players have a right to and so on. Because, look, there are times when things like this happen and no one knows anything about it. There's an appeal, and the appeal is, and the player is exonerated, and, you know, none of that stuff got attached to the player. So
Did you know?
So it came out that afternoon, and Jurickson had talked to the players. So we found out late morning that afternoon is when we got word of it. And again, it's a super confidential thing, rightfully so. I completely get it. And I think it was announced a few hours later. So I guess we had a few hours from that point. You know, Verdugo, we signed him in March. And, you know, really, that was in when we were signing James McCann, Craig Kimbrell. When you get to the end of spring, or towards the end of spring training, that's kind of the time to check in on the remaining free agents, where guys may have wanted a major league contract, guys don't want to go to the minors. At that point, they all realize, look, we're at the end of spring training. I'm going to have to go to the minor leagues in some capacity. And you don't want to wait that long, but ultimately, if you can't get deals done, that's the time to call around. So we called around on all those guys, Verdugo being one of those guys. You know, he had not had a major league offer up to that point. Getting a major league offer was important to him. He had options. Obviously, he wasn't going to be ready to start the year. Guys like Kimbrell and McCann the same way. The fact that he was willing to go to the minor leagues is the only reason that deal got done. And we looked at it when we factored in the price and the ability to go to the minors, and we've needed to add outfielders every year, especially from the left side. It was a no-brainer for us at $1.5 million when the minimum is $760,000 to add a really good player like that, really talented, knowing he would be delayed, just like it was a no-brainer to add a McCann and a Craig Kimbrell and so on. So, no, I mean, that's something that we're going to look to add depth every year at any time. And, you know, the Profar thing happened, I guess, 3 weeks after the fact, I think right around there.
All right, we got about 4 minutes left with Alex Anthopoulos. We'll get to as much as we can. The Ronald Acuna tweet, do you have any role in the follow-up of that? Obviously, I thought it was great to see his apology go in front of the team. It got handled. You're a veteran team and a veteran manager. Did you have any role in how any of that plays out?
No, at the end of the day, Ronald's his own person. He's not an 18-year-old kid. Look, I was encouraged that, you know, I talked to him when he came back, and he was contrite. And that's all you can do. You can't undo it, right? It happened. He did take it down within an hour or whatever it was. Because I remember it was just before a 1:30 game on Easter Sunday and a little afternoon, and I think just before the start of the game it was down, but it happened, right? I mean, it was there. There's screenshots and all that, and he didn't deny that. And, you know, I spoke to him, and, you know, he made no excuses, very apologetic. He went directly to Snit. I mean, no one told him, you know, go into Snit's office, sit him down, go address the team. No one gave him those instructions. I don't think with things like that, you can script them. They have to be authentic. They have to be sincere. Otherwise, it's not going to work. But look, he made a mistake. He's not going to be the first one or the last. And all you can do is move forward. And I can tell you that our players, you know, in talking to some of them after, you know, Ronald is, people see the guy on the field who's demonstrative and energetic and so on. in the clubhouse, he is as quiet as a church mouse. You won't even know he's there. He's shy. If you did not know the Ronald Acuna you see on the field, and you walked into our clubhouse, you'd say, who's that shy guy in the corner with his head down who's quiet? He interacts, but he's very shy and quiet. And for him to want to get up and stand up in front of the team and say, I meant no disrespect. I did not want to be a distraction. I made a mistake. I sincerely apologize. I know to our players, knowing him and how shy he is, they were impressed that he chose to do that. So it's in the past. We move forward, and we're excited to have him back soon.
Alex Anthopoulos with us. You're worried about your closer, Raisel Iglesias. Oh, it's been a rough month or so.
It has, and not at all. And I know I'm supposed to say that. I wouldn't come out and say it. But and I will tell you why. The one thing that the fans all see is when guys actually pitch in a game, we monitor and track how much they're up in the bullpen, right? And those, when you're up and you're, we call it being up and hot and getting hot, getting ready to get into the game, that's something, right? It's not this equivalent of an appearance, but, I've had some guys tell me that's the equivalent of half of an appearance. I've had other guys tell me it's three quarters of an appearance. Some guys will get up twice and not get in a game, and that could be viewed as an appearance. So he's been up a lot. That's not a criticism. He's always available. There's no issues with his health. We've played a lot of tight games. Those are the moves Snit needed to make, and it happens. But I think some of the rough outings have been on the tail end of he's been worked hard. And again, that's not a knock. He's available. We signed off. Everyone knows before we all sign off on guys being available. So I'm right there as a part of it. But that's where some of the rough outings have occurred. The other component is he's given up an abnormally high rate of home runs, and that's normally not a skill unless you're throwing 80 miles an hour or you lob the ball in there. He's given up, or he was at the time, close to 10% home run rate, and normally for his career he's probably around 3. He was below 2 a year ago, but even his career high was about 4%, so more than half. So those are all things that over time are going to balance out. Now, it's hard to watch because he's coming in when the game's on the line and they hurt. Look, we had the game where Allen's, to me, as good a defensive player as we're going to find in the game. He makes an error behind him. There's a ball, whether it was a comeback or Adam Raisel could have turned two and been out of the inning. Just some freak things there. But prior to that, I think he had 4 scoreless appearances in a row. So I still feel great when he comes in the game. That home run rate is not going to stay. It's going to come down. So with a lot of these guys, his stats are going to continue to get better, and he's going to be in the same place.
Is that the same thing with your positional guys who are not having great years? Some of them, the back of the baseball card doesn't lie, that you believe that, listen, those numbers will turn. Certainly, for Ozzie and some of these other guys, you just expect better numbers.
Yeah, I think, look, those guys have been streaky. I think Ozzie, there's moments in his career where it's, great year, all-star silver slugger, then not as good the following year. The work ethic, the hustle, the character, everything, the athleticism. He's running as well as he has in years. His sprint speeds are up. He looks great. So he's just off to a slow start with the bat. Harris has been streaky as well. We've seen this where he's gotten off to slow starts, and then he's come on at the end of the year. Look, the players will be the first ones to tell you they want to go wire to wire and be great and be elite and be all-stars. And we're doing everything we can as a staff across the board, office and the coaches, to get them going. But that's where you hope to have a deep lineup, a deep, 9 guys that are getting the job done, where if 2 or 3 are not playing as well, the other 6 or 7 guys are carrying them. And guys are going to go through cold streaks. And we've been able to overcome some of those things. And that's where I'm so optimistic about where we're headed, because these guys, I don't believe their stats are going to end where they are now in terms of the OPSs and things like that. I think they are going to climb, which should ultimately lead to more wins.
About a minute left. How bad did you feel about telling Bryce Elder he's going down?
Terrible. And I told him this. Obviously, Snit spoke, I spoke. And I told him it's the first time we've sent him down and it's not performance-related. We were agonizing about it. We knew, Smith, Schaarber, and Elder had those last 2 days. And, we were talking with Rick Kranitz and Eric Abreu and Snit and me and Walt Weiss and so on about what we were going to do with these two guys. And we knew one of them was going to go, and neither of them deserved to go. And you hate to say it, but those last 2 starts that they had were that important, And we knew Strider was coming back once he got out of the sim game and he was doing well. And Elder threw the ball well, and then it was Smith Sharver's turn. A noon game, normal rest. You don't know what you're going to get. He threw the ball even better. And not that Bryce is happy about it, but he's professional, but he understands the alternative is sending down a guy with a 2.29 ERA. And he, you know, he'd say, look, I understand. AJ's throwing the ball great. He can't go down. So, look, it's a great problem to have. I know for a fact we will not go with these five the remainder of the year. Something's going to happen. We're going to need them. And what I told him, more importantly, is the upside is his career for me is back on track. Because last year it wasn't the same, and he was an all-star in 23. And that's the important part here is he's finally back to throwing the ball the way he did in 2023. And he's a huge piece for us going forward.
Is Ronald coming back on Friday, Alex?
I want to say yes. And if it was up to me, he'd be playing tonight. But right. The training staff, the medical staff, and I would say Ronald as well, I think they're taking a more cautious approach to this thing. You know, we don't want to go through what we did in 2022, where we brought him back. He was capable of playing, but he wasn't the same, and he wasn't right. And we're just taking a little more time, and it's painful because these games count. And we don't have a date yet, so I don't want to tease and say there's a chance. Is it a 0% chance? No. Is it likely? I would say probably not. You know, we're not leaning to that.
Probably now, not likely? Ooh, okay.
I mean, I guess I would say this. We don't have a date. If he's down, he's playing tonight. He's played six innings, two nights in a row in the field, and he DH'd the following. So we'll get him to at least seven innings, maybe more, but at least seven tonight. I don't know. Let's say he plays seven innings, steals three bases, makes unbelievable diving plays in the outfield, and he comes in and he just says, I'm ready. I got to play. I'm ready to go. We'll have a conversation. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay.
We do have a pattern here to get him going and build him up. And I think we sent him on the road in the minor leagues to get those reps. So I would think he's going to have at least a few games there, but we're going to take it day to day.
Drake Baldwin, real quick, more at-bats coming for him somewhere. Obviously, kid has been absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, he's been great. It's a great job by scouting and development with him. Drake, you guys will have him on, I'm sure, at some point. He's an amazing kid. High energy. You love being around him. Sure. You know, Snit's going to just try to get him in the lineup when he can, especially with a left-handed bat with the starters against the Red Sox. Pretty good splits right-left. It made sense to get the left-handed bat in there. Murph, we're facing two out of three left-handers with the Nats, so Drake will play game two. Murph is playing game one and game three. And Snit does a great job of getting all these guys at bats and keeping them in the lineup, so we're excited about them.
All right, before you go, you do a wellness check on your friends in Toronto. Those folks who don't know, it's been a rough go. They were another game seven loss. You talk about star-crossed fans, right? That was not.
Yeah, my family, yeah, it's a big, you know, I just got someone sent me a tweet. Stephen A. Smith was all over them, calling them the Dallas Cowboys, which, you know, you get to. You know, when you get the NHL and the Leafs being talked about, but I got a lot of family that are diehard Leafs fans. I was even trying to just, my son's not into the NHL because he's grown up in the United States, right? He's California and now here. Hockey is not his thing. He has no interest. I was trying to get him a little engaged, and I was telling him it's game seven.
Yeah,
it's the Leafs, you know. Come on, you got. So he watched with me a little bit. And
seven,
was
it,
you know,
seven straight game seven losses? Is that what it is?
Yeah, and it was just, you know, 0-0 after the first, and then the wheels fell off. And it is just, you know, the media there, it's you know, the Leafs are a big deal. The Jays are a big deal, too. But it is, it's exciting as a hockey fan because they love it. They love the team. And, yeah, it's tough. You know, they got a good group there. They got really talented. But it's, I know my family's crushed.
Yeah, that could not get the kid to get into the NHL. That's tough for
That's
a Canadian,
funny.
I'll tell you. Hey,
I know, it's rough.
I know. Hey, thanks for answering so many questions and being a part of the show. And looking forward to a huge Memorial Day weekend series after we handle the Nats.
All right, guys. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Alex Anthopoulos, I think we got to most of the stuff we needed. We'll come back. Sports Radio 929. Caleb Clark, hard foul on Angel Reese. Angel Reese goes after. A conversation. Angel Reese painted as a major villain here, and might have been some racial stuff thrown at her by the fans. We don't know for sure, but the league's looking into it, and the Indiana Fever are as well. Okay, that's fine. RG3, after it happened, says this was evidence that clearly Angel Reese hates Caitlin Clark. That she hates Caitlin Clark because she didn't go after other people that way. That was his opinion. Well, Ryan Clark feels like that just fueled the flames of this racist notion of Angel Reese attacking Caitlin Clark or whatever it was. So that was what we thought the conversation was about until Ryan Clark decides to talk about the person with that opinion, a former co-worker at ESPN, RG3.
If you're RG3, when is the last time within your household you've had a conversation about what she's dealing with? You haven't been able to do that because in both of your marriages, you've been married to white women.
Oh, okay. Here he goes, doubling down.
When I worked with RG3, he would make all of these sort of corny jokes about milk and how much he loved it and how important it was. And he always points out on social media the color of his wife's skin, as if the color of her skin is what makes her special, as if the color of her skin is what makes her a good wife.
He proceeds to go on and on about RG3's obsession with white women and that he doesn't have perspective. He always has to trump up and trump up the fact that his wife is white. And Ryan says that means you can't speak on this because you don't know the plight of black women because you aren't there for black women. And then RG3 responds.
All of you know there's a line in life that you just simply don't cross. Wives and children are always off limits. And Ryan Clark has sprinted past that line. Ryan Clark didn't like my sports take that Angel Reese hates Caitlin Clark. And that's fine. It's okay. It's part of the game. Sports media, I'm going to have an opinion. This person might not agree with it. That person might not agree with it. But what you don't do is turn around and personally attack me and my family just because you don't agree with a sports opinion that is purely based off the sport.
He says, you've gone too far, and it's 2 minutes and 30 seconds of, he doesn't warn Ryan Clark, he just says, you've gone to a point of no return.
Oh, boy.
So, what are you seeing as reactions? Mostly by black people, right? I mean, a lot of white people are going in
there. Yeah, a lot of NFL players are chiming in.
NFL players.
And I got to say, some are for RG3 and some are for Ryan Clark. They're kind of...
So not everybody's saying that Ryan Clark went too far by bringing that up. Some of them have been basically backing that up. So right. I'll just say this. I've seen a lot of tension on Twitter and... between former coworkers and feuds. But that, my friends, was wow.
Yeah.
That was a whole other level of discourse that folks are uncomfortable with. So Ryan Clark said he's standing by it. Says RG3.
This is not over. This is going to evolve. This is getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, it's the whole notion, right? The cultural conversation about interracial marriages and black guys that only date white girls and Ryan Clark calling him out for that and saying you're never there for black women because you clearly don't even have them in your home. So there you go. Meanwhile, what you need to know is that Caitlin Clark is in town on Thursday night.
That's correct.
Which is for us the best way for us to handle this story. You're not going to hear us two sit here and be like, okay.
Me and Steak are white, in case you didn't know.
Yeah, I don't think we're the ones to chime in here.
We'll talk about milk, but it's not going to be in the same reference at all.
Yeah, no, it's chocolate milk in that reference. No, for real, chocolate. And people are saying now that's a great drink, like post-workout and all that. Have you heard that? Like
what? Chocolate milk? Oh, yeah, my goodness gracious.
You heard that, too? Well,
yeah, it's got protein and a lot of electrolytes, a little bit of fat. It's great.
All right.
You want protein after a workout. And chocolate milk tastes great, yeah.
There you go.
All right.
Is there anything else you wanted to play?
I just want to remind everybody that Brett Favre documentary drops today on Netflix, and the reviews are in. I guess it's titled Untold, but they were very. It was very soft on the Urban Meyer ones. They've done five. They've not been breaking news by strict journalists.
Journalists. Yeah,
this one goes there, according to the guy that.
It's not soft at all. Brett Favre did not cooperate.
That's right. They
Jen Sturger's in there. Said
yep,
Brett
the
Favre
Mississippi stuff is in there. All of it. So it's getting. It's an hour long. So I'm gonna definitely watch it.
And is he not diagnosed with a form of Parkinson?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Right? Man, oh man. You talk about a fall from grace for that guy. Anyway, let's give the phone number again. A couple of things I want to get to.
404-726-0929.
You got a favorite bench guy in baseball?
Matt Diaz. Remember Matty Diaz? Florida State University's. Love him. Great
guy. Who's the guy that you said stirred the drink for the Braves? Lefty. Always. Oh gosh, you just told me the other day. Former Royal, was it? Lefty, white guy that was always a part of driving the energy for the Braves teams. Who are you thinking of?
Bo has the correct answer.
Martin Prado.
Martin,
I don't know if that's
Prado.
Guy you were thinking of. He's Hispanic, but Martin Prado was the ultimate bench utility guy for the Braves.
Now, that guy is more talented than Charlie Culberson, who everybody loves. But he was not as good as Martin Prado. Martin Prado was like a legit professional hitter.
I mean, when we got the Uptons here and we traded away Martin Prado, that was...
No, I got it. It was Hinsky. You were talking about...
Eric Hinsky.
Yeah,
is
that's
the
Mac
guy. Daddy.
Right?
Yeah, he was. That's a good one. Yeah,
another one he always talked about is like, you know, 404-726-0929.
David Ross.
No, David Ross.
Was a great...
For sure. Remember, David Ross gets the start... I believe it was, did he start over Javi in the playoff game and he hits the home run in Chipper's last game? I don't know if I had it mixed up here, but David Ross, I remember talking to him on his way to the stadium when we found out David Ross was going to be starting. He's a great example of a bench guy.
Yeah, I love him.
And he won a World Series in Boston. He's a huge Red Sox legend there. He had a big World Series, I think, against the Dodgers, I think it was. Anyway, really good one. I love the David Ross. Movie that simply you must see in the theater, 404-726-0929. If you're never called three strikes, you're getting on.
I guess you're
right
doing that because of Mission Impossible, right? Like, it's a great thing
Tom
to see
Cruise.
In the movie. Yeah.
So Tom Cruise was in a theater last night. I think it was
New York.
L.A.
It
was in
New
York.
Premiere. Mm-hmm.
All right, because he was on with Fallon. Mm-hmm. Thank you. He sat there talking to these theater workers for 15, 20 minutes. He does a whole bit. Go get your popcorn. Go to a big old theater, sit there, and just have an unbelievable night out. But go to the theater. Go to the theater. He's like pushing hard. That's the way that this film needs to be seen. This is not a film you watch on the back of your Delta flight and with those, you know, somewhat crappy headphones. That is not the way you see a Mission Impossible. Mm-hmm. Safe to say?
I agree 1,000%.
All right. 404-726-0929 if you want to get aboard. We'll take some calls here. Are we going to call? We got about 4 minutes to take calls. So get to Bo, 404-726-0929.
Jock Peterson. These are on Twitter. I put the questions out at SportsSandra. Jock Peterson is a great one. Julio Franco, old school, you guys, was the greatest teammate ever.
Oh, my God. He lasted how many? 20-something years?
He's still playing. He's still playing. He's 94.
You just knew if you gave that guy a bat that he has a chance to come up
and have a moment. Oh, my goodness.
That's a great question to put out there on social
media. Somebody said the meatball sub is a bad sandwich, and that's controversial.
I would just say
it's
not going to make the rest of your day very productive.
Right.
So I'm not going meatball sandwich like I would when I was younger, but I'm not going to call that a bad sandwich. I'm going to call a Cuban a bad – I'm trying to think of a bad sandwich. If you don't like tuna, that's a bad sandwich, I guess, right? So egg salad, some might say. NBA Finals.
Okay, yeah, here we go.
I think the Knicks are a great pick to beat the Pacers. The more I think about it, Brad Stevens talked about this in his end-of-year press conference with the Celtics. He talked about, first of all, Jason Tatum had already gone under the knife, had surgery, and was already in recovery the next day. By the time the injury report came out, remember they were like,
yeah, they did.
We'll find out the next
That's
day.
That's exactly right.
By the time they announced it, surgery had already happened. They literally, I think they must have done it that night or in the morning. Like there is a
he
whole
went
thing.
For his MRI and they just did it.
Right there, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that's what he said, that the New York hospitals where they were so lucky that this surgeon was ready to go that night, mm-hmm. and they did it immediately. But what he did say was, he said, I feel like the Knicks are playing with momentum. It's one thing once they won those two 20-point comebacks, but you could see their confidence. The way they looked the other night, the way that Brunson's playing, the way that, you know, Karl Anthony Towns and Josh Hart and Anunoby, like, they're playing with incredible confidence. I think they're going to the finals, and I think Oklahoma City beats them in 6 or 7 games. But that's going to be the finals, Oklahoma City and the Knicks will get right to the end, but they will not win the title. Let's go to our phone calls. Jason in Marietta. Hey, Jason, give me a bench player, a favorite.
Favorite bench player would have to be I think DeRosa was a starter, but that was kind of what
DeRosa
I was.
No, he
was
a good one.
That's a great one.
I mean, he started sometimes, but no, he was an absolute bench guy. Bad sandwich.
Monte Cristo. It's gross. Be a grown up and get a real sandwich.
I agree.
I don't think you want French toast as your vessel for the sandwich, right?
Right.
That's what it is. Hey, a movie that you just absolutely have to see in the theater.
You got to go with Gladiator. That opening scene was just absolutely mind-blowing when it came out.
I will say, thank you, buddy. I've never had a better theater experience than seeing Jaws in the theater. You know, back there in the 70s, it was a sold-out theater on a Saturday night, and you see the grandness of that movie, Jaws, was just unbelievable. Joe and Buford, and they do that a lot. They'll have anniversary showings of Jaws in the theater.
Right.
Hey, Joe, your favorite bench guy in baseball?
In his later years, would be Lou Piniella.
Lou Piniella was a starter, was he not?
Yeah, but in his later years, he was a player coach, and he would come off the bench and
player coach
and
for the Reds or the Yankees?
Yanks.
Bad sandwich.
Liverwurst.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
My dad loved Liverwurst.
A movie that you must see in the theater.
Oh, shit.
Drop.
Let's drop that. All right, Joe, and to the audience, it's 3 questions. We're not trying to bat 66% here. We're trying to answer all 3.
Those were good questions, too. I don't know why everybody...
I don't know.
Maybe there's a
I've
gas leak on 75.
I've stopped trying to figure this out. Thank you, Bo. Appreciate the help always. Caleb as well. And Alex Anthopoulos. Back tomorrow with Drew Butler. Bye.